I'd like to greet you in the name of Jesus Christ today, the only worthy name in which I can greet you. And as we look at the work that lies before us, first of all, looking at the many of you that are out here, I see many different faces. Some are familiar, some are not, but I hope more of them are before the week is over. But I see people that have a purpose, a people that have a calling, and that's what has brought us here together this week. However, we do face some dangers and things we have to deal with. This isn't a rose garden that we've been invited into. It does bloom beautifully with flowers that we can carry with us and cherish through life and memories. But we're going to be looking specifically this week at things, and some of them you may say aren't applicable to my situation. And as you see things like that, we will address issues that come out of these things. Many of them will be relationship-related things, because relationships reach deep inside of us, and they're related to those around us, those that sit before us, those that work beside us. Important areas in making the success of our schools what God wants it to be. So we're gonna bounce off of a verse that is found in the Old Testament, Song of Solomon. 2:15 says, "Take us the small foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes." Those grapes are very tender and they're very special because they're God's grapes. They're the work of His vineyard and the bounty of His vineyard. I'm going to be putting a few overheads up here. My overheads aren't overheads that you're going to be taking some of them, but not many that you'll be taking actual notes off of. They're going to be, I'm kind of a visual teacher, instructor. I like things that make our minds work. Okay, I'm a little bit limited here, but you can get the idea. We see a grapevine. Now, in your setting, in your situation, you may have a name for each one of those grapes up there. They're students sitting in your classrooms. They're people that you work with. They're people you're going to inspire. And let's look at some things, the little things. And you may think some of these things are kind of odd. But in my years of experience, I've seen some odd things that were real challenges with the relationship things they brought with them into the classroom. And before I forget it, there will be a container that's going to make this personal that I would like to place over here by the door in the hallway. It's going to be a little container. It's going to have a place to drop something in. On the top of it, it'll have a picture of our enemy, the fox himself. And if you have something that is particular to your setting, something that you would like to share this week, I would like for you to feel free to drop it in there. If we get a large response, we'll work through them best we can. But I do want to have an open time that I can work through and incorporate some of these things that are particular to the needs of this group that is sitting here. So, if you face little foxes, and I know I'm talking to all levels of experience here. Some of you are facing your first year, and some of you, many years of experience, are here for a shot in the arm. But before we get into the actual little foxes themselves, I'd like to lay a little foundation work. That foundation work is going to be looking at us as teachers ourselves. Who are we? We'd like to liken our classroom to a vineyard. A vineyard that is a can be a beautiful place of bearing fruit, a wonderful place to work for us that are responsible to work there as husbandmen, a vineyard that can be pleasing to God when He sees the fruit that comes out of it. And as we look at the development of different stages that fruit goes through, we know that fruit goes through a stage when it's real green and hard, and you might think that's exactly who I'm dealing with right now, or did last year. But then there's a time when it's very succulent and sweet, and it's full of something that is valuable. We can't fill it, but we can help. We're called to do that as teachers in developing that young, tender fruit. Now, I'd like to introduce to us the danger. By the way, it's hard for me to stand still and teach. I'm really displaying some real self-respect, discipline up here. But I'm wired today, y'all, so I can move around. You ever had a student that was wired and did move around? Okay, this little fella here, he's just fixing to do what he likes to do here. And you'll see a picture of him on the top of the container that I put outside there. He's fixing to nibble and chew. And he doesn't work like a wolf, big bites, vicious, tearing at the vine. It's the little foxes that chew on a vine, do the destructive things that they do. First, we need to work at identifying. When we come into contact with the little foxes, sometimes we don't even realize what the problem is. We wonder, what's going on? Have you ever walked into your classroom and you just feel something isn't quite right? If you don't have that experience yet, you will probably be granted with that feeling sometime, unfortunately. It's so wonderful to walk in there and feel that everything is just right. And that look that's on their face and in their eyes tells you you've got a good relationship with them as the husbandman of the vineyard. And they're looking to us. But if it's not, then I need to be able to identify what the problem is. Now, I don't know how many of you boys in here, I doubt very many of the girls, can identify, you know, footprints, paw prints. I always enjoyed doing that as a boy, going down in some soft dirt there by the creek or somewhere, or in the mud by the lane, and see what came through that night. Oh, that's a coon. There was a bobcat and a fox. And what was that? I know some years ago we started in my part of the state of Georgia, ending up with some tracks that had something dragging behind it. What was this? Well, I tell you, we have to be able to identify what we're working with. I found out people call them possum on the half shell if you eat them. You ever heard of oysters on the half shell? They're armadillos. We're not going to talk much about an armadillo. We could talk a while about them. They're very unusual creatures. But we need to identify the problem, the thing that's threatening our classroom, and get into working with that. And in doing that, partly we can look at ourselves as teachers. What kind of a teacher am I? How do I look at my commitment? You have made commitments. You're committed somewhere, probably. If not, I'd like for you to raise your hand, because I know 10 places I can get you committed. That commitment is a high calling. First of all, it's a commitment to God. You may have committed to teach somewhere, but you have made a commitment to God. You've made a commitment to make an influence on young people, on those tender grapes for a whole school term. And we're going to look beyond the academics. What I'm going to talk about today can, in the following days, Lord willing, will affect our academics and will affect our teaching ability and our ability to reach these students. But what we're going to look at a lot comes from within our relationships. My commitment to teach is a high calling. First of all, it's a commitment to God. If our commitment to God is to fulfill His will in this classroom and to do our best, it's the highest commitment you can make. It's following Him. Am I a born-again believer? Do I know Jesus Christ? Has He made a difference in my heart, in my life? If so, I have a very important credential to help me get started. If I'm a born-again believer and I want to be a disciple, that means I want to get to work and do the Lord's work in this classroom. I want to see His will worked out. And I want to see these children grow. I want to see them to grow in godly wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Do I often read His Word? Is it special to me? I've had numerous books on teaching in my time. But there's a lot to be grasped from these books. But there's not very many of them that will feed you spiritually like the Word itself. Looking at preparing you and being a part of this high calling, we have to meditate and study ourselves. I've talked about teaching as being a high calling. Some people have a negative look at teaching. And I'm just going to say this truthfully. I want you to climb above that and look beyond that. Because a negative look or not feeling really positive about what God has called me to can affect the way you teach. It can affect the way you feel. And the devil will come with the little foxes at the lowest point when you wonder, why am I here? Why am I here? First of all, this high calling is a godly calling. We've talked about that a little bit. It's not just a job. It's kingdom work. It's kingdom work. It is a ministry within the bonds of a school. It's a unique calling with a special work because we have a special work to reach these children with. I have something to take to them that is more important than just what's in the bonds of a book. And that responsibility should lie heavily upon me as I realize what that responsibility is like. It should rest heavily upon me. That's the reason I reach out, and I need God on either side to help me carry this responsibility. We impact children for life, not just for today, not just for yesterday. We impact them for life. From time to time, you'll probably find it necessary, I have, to slip away. And when the time has come and there's little foxes creeping in and I'm starting to sense that something's not right, I need to get back, talk to God about it, but reconnect with my calling. We can slowly disconnect as teachers. And sometimes if we back off far enough because of what we're involved in, and our responsibilities, even if our heart's being blessed by the day, if we back off far enough that we start sensing things and pull the plug, we become disconnected. I find it and have found it in the past good to reconnect and evaluate. I'd like to ask you a few questions here. Some of these you won't be able to relate to, and some of them you will. God has means of getting people moved through life, kind of like a chessboard, to positions that He wants them in. Now, I don't know how you got to where you are, but you're here. Why am I a teacher? I'm going to answer these with some things that you probably maybe feel that you can relate to. Some of them you won't. I always wanted to be a teacher. You know, I've taught sessions before when I've asked the group, how many of you wanted to be a teacher? And a majority of the hands went up. That's good. That's good. You're doing something that you feel like you enjoy. But not all of us came by it that way. Maybe if you ask, why am I a teacher? I just loved my school days and my teacher. Now, that makes a teacher feel good. If they have left a mark in your life that you can positively look upon, hopefully we will leave that positive mark in their lives. Why am I a teacher? School was easy for me, and I always enjoyed it. I've asked groups that question before, and a majority of the teachers raise their hand. I enjoy teaching and working with children that have learning disabilities and special needs. And why am I a teacher? Teaching was always in my family. Maybe my father was a teacher. Maybe my mother was a teacher. And it does have a tendency to spread. I have been a teacher for many years. And I've had four daughters. Four of them have, my youngest daughter, there's still hope for her. I think God has a place for her in a classroom somewhere. But four of them have sat in classrooms as teachers. I have two sons that haven't felt the leading in that direction yet. But that can be a good jump start. That is some good mentoring to fall back on. I felt called to teach. That's why I'm a teacher. Teaching is a ministry. And I had to ask myself at times when I was ebbing low, why am I here? And then when the question comes around for next year, should I do it? Why shouldn't I do it? Those questions trouble us at times. With me, it was a calling. And I hope it turns into a calling for this term, at least for each of us. There's a difference between filling a place and answering a calling. A calling and a ministry. Some may answer that. Others encouraged me to teach. Sometimes others see in us, and that happened with me. As a matter of fact, before I answered my calling, I played Jonah to the degree that I was almost afraid to go fishing for fear I'd fall out of a boat. And I didn't know how big a fish was in this lake. But, I ran. I ran from God. But His calling was heavy, and His thumb got heavier. And He got me right where He wanted me. So is it mine to give up? Is it yours to give up when we ask ourselves those questions? I thought I knew, but now I'm not so sure. That's a midterm answer. Why am I teaching? I thought I knew, but now I'm not so sure. That's when we need to back off and reevaluate. Why am I teaching? The school was out of time and still searching for teachers. That happens often, I'm afraid. And people get into positions that they can feel inferior. They can feel like I'm just a Band-Aid. You know, I helped fix the problem, but I'm the one that's in the problem position now. Now, God has means to move people just like He wants them and to fill places just like He wants them. You know, it reminds me of a young lady that one time that was really grappling with that question. You may know someone that has grappled with it. She was, should I teach or shouldn't I teach? Should I teach? Is it something God wants me to do, or have I just been asked to do it? And I heard her heart as she discussed this thing with me. And the deeper the dilemma went, the more confused she was making herself. So I just turned the question around and just asked her one question. Do you have a good reason not to teach? And she just had a little problem coming up with an answer for that. As a matter of fact, she had an answer for the school board within about a week. And she was a blessing. She was a real blessing. The last one we won't spend much time on. They needed a teacher and I needed a job. Regardless of the journey by which you've traveled to arrive at your desk and chair, you have arrived, and be sure God makes no mistakes. This is His work. God sees around the corner and over the hill. He knows the school term that lies before you now, and He sees next year's ending program. He sees the names on the diplomas. So let's lay our hand in His and walk with Him and trust Him. Unlike other professions that are honorable and necessary, our profession makes an impact on the future of the church, the community, and the world. I've heard of some of you that are going international with your responsibility. You're going to take your calling and go to many different areas and directions and settings. Whether you're going to be in a large school, a small school, whether you're a speck in the pot or you're the speck and the pot, it doesn't matter. God's interested in every one of them, and He's interested in every one of us. We have a godly profession, unlike those other professions, in that way of the impact of the future. Several years ago, I'm an electrician by trade, and I have to take continuing education credits to keep up my license. We were always just considered the tradesmen. You know, the plumbers, the electricians, those of us that we just did the work. You know, we made the lights come on. We made the water go uphill and downhill and kept everybody happy. But they started coming at us from a different approach. They said, fellas, you're professionals. You're professionals. That's what you are. I thought, I'm a professional. Okay, this is good. It's the first time I've heard an electrician that got that title, but what they were doing is they were working on us in our mind about ourselves. And in that, it directly affects the work I do. When I go to a job to do a job, if I think I'm a professional, it's probably going to make a whole different attitude in the way I walk into that job and what I expect them to think of me and what I want to do to make them respect that. I want to tell you today, you're professionals. Your calling's a high calling. You might say, I don't know whether I am or not. This is my first year. This is God's work. This is kingdom work. They started giving us names like technicians. You know, I'm supposed to be an electrical technician now. I used to be a wire twister. But I heard a man say the other day that he's a mechanic. He said he used to be. He said now he's an automotive technician. And longer ago, he was a grease monkey. But that's what I want to impress upon you today, that you're professionals. You have a calling that's a special calling. You're the very foundation of something, the very center. Now, this is a very elementary little drawing here. What this drawing represents is us as teachers in a classroom setting. You'll hear more about this little drawing later. The center there is like an axle. Everything pivots around this thing. In a classroom, that's where we are. And that's where the little foxes want to really cause the damage, is in there. Those dots out around represent our charges. The openings, we can move freely in and out of those openings among our charges if our relationships are good with them. The atmosphere is like it should be within that setting. That axle can move out of its place and back in its place, and this thing just keeps revolving. But that little broken circle around the axle represents your place of responsibility. That is your place. That is your place of authority. And I don't want to scare you today. I don't want to frighten you. But that's your spot. No one else can fill it. We have to square our shoulders and realize God has called us to stand in that spot. And it is a lonely spot at times. But God is there with us. But later I'll explain how we dare not allow our students and charges to find themselves in that circle. That's a big no-no. So as we look at ourselves and our responsibility and realize how much I impact, this whole thing turns around me, God and I, as we're in the center of the focus here. And you realize that now you are some type of academic specialist instead of just a teacher. Now we have the opportunity to reach out to all of those around us. And we realize how our views and our very nature is going to affect the relationships with those individual dots out there. And if you don't already, those dots will take on names and characteristics that have special needs, either in academics or in their personality, their emotions. There are things that they're going to need that we have to, that's going to be our responsibility to reach out to them. There's a saying that some of you have heard. I know you have, because you might have heard it from me and somewhere else you've been. If you touch a rock, you touch the past. Seeing more about rocks before this is over with. If you touch a rock, you touch the past. If you touch a flower, you touch the present. Okay, I think I went dead there for a minute, didn't I? If you touch a child, you touch the future. Okay, to look at what kind of a teacher I am quickly, just to ask ourselves a few questions. Am I committed? I trust you are. You're here. You didn't get here by mistake. You're here. Now, somebody might have brought you, and I didn't notice anybody taking handcuffs off out here in the parking lot. So I assume you're here by your own free will. You're here because you're committed. Of working. What is the level of your goals that you set as you look at your classroom for this year? Is it excellence? Good enough to get by? Or any old way will do? You say, Mr. Whit, I don't know yet. I don't know what they're like. Or yes, I do know what they're like, and I want the best for them. If we remember this is God's work and this is kingdom work, yes, our goals should be high, goals of excellence. And remember, I could easily slide off here into talking about those that struggle. Excellence isn't always up here. Excellence is their best, whatever their best is. There's many different levels of excellence. Am I flexible? Are you a flexible person? Can you roll with the punches? I can remember so well teachers that have come dashing in my room, knock, 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 before they came in. Yes, they come in, close the door. Mr. Witt, looks like something's wrong. I say, yes. I'm out of work. I think you're a miracle is what you are. This is the second day of school. No, I mean, I scheduled this to be done, and we did it already. They were yet to learn what flexibility was all about. We'll just shovel them a little more. What do you have planned for tomorrow? He wasn't in any state of mind for humor, though. What do you have planned for tomorrow? Such and such and such. Let's start doing that and working in those directions. Flexibility, you know, we have to roll with the punches, y'all. We have to. These are just a few things that I jotted down as it came to mind about teachers. What about a sense of humor? I'm a teacher that I've always enjoyed humor in my classroom. A sense of humor isn't particularly something that's silly and giddy. Humor sees the bright and positive side of things. And God has a sense of humor. And as we see that and experience that, that is such an important asset in a classroom to help children and students. When I leave my sense of humor outside somewhere and come in the classroom, they know right away, something's wrong. Mr. Witt's got a problem, and we're probably going to have one too. But that sense of humor, often it comes through the children, something that the children do. And the longer you teach, you'll treasure some of those little things that brought with them special times. I can think of one of those, a boy that I was blessed to be asked to speak at his wedding reception because I revealed a story he didn't remember anymore. It was seventh grade. We'll call him Tommy, because there's some people in here that know him. Tommy, we were out on the playground playing one day, and Tommy all of a sudden turns around and faces the whole group. And he begins to back up. He backs over to where I am. I thought, this is an unusual maneuver. He said, Mr. Whit, I knew what had happened. He just ventilated the seat of his pants. And he ripped them wide open. And he said, I need to call my mama. I said, okay, go right ahead. Unfortunately, we weren't near the building, and we got to see him go beep, beep, beep backwards all the way over the building. Well, everybody knew what was going on with Tommy. You know, he goes over to the bathroom and waits there for his mom, and she gets him some more pants. And just a little bit, Tommy comes. We see her coming down the road, so we knew rescue's on the way. And he's soon out the bathroom door, and here he comes on the playground. Now, he was a seventh grader, and he stood about this high. And his pants struck him just below his knees. I looked at Tommy. I said, "Oh, glad you're back." You know, he knew that something was a little awkward there. He said, "They're my wedding pants." Now, for a seventh grader to tell you he's wearing his wedding pants and the way these pants looked, I thought, all right, this bears further discussion. So we went on and played volleyball, and I was very thankful that those stuck with him, because those fit like, if those ripped, he was just going to come completely out of them. But we got inside, and just a little bit later, Tommy comes up to my desk. He says, "Mr. Quitt, these were the only pants I had." And I thought, well, appreciate you wearing your wedding pants for us, you know. He said, "Really, Tommy?" I said, "Your wedding pants?" He looked at me horrified. You know, seventh grader, girls still bite, almost. He said, "I said, waiting pants." Then I understood that length on him. So yes, at his wedding, I got to describe his wedding pants. The classroom is a beautiful place. Is my attitude tempered with humility, in compassion, in humor, and love? What they see in me as a teacher, and they feel from me as a teacher, is so important as to what our relationships are going to be about and what they're going to be like. These relationships, we'll talk more about the specifics of those. Today we've looked at us as a teacher and getting us into the classroom, and a little bit about what kind of a teacher I am. I think I have time for one more short story here about when I went into teaching. I'll tell you, I went into teaching from my experience that I was going to make an impact. I was filled with fire. I was going to make an impact. I was going to see it done right at any expense. And I holstered my gun and went to work. The first week of school, I had something that dethroned me. And I'll never forget it. And it's a story I've shared. You may have heard it before. It's the cow in the closet. I had taught 3 math classes that morning, and I had a bad head cold. So I decided as soon as I can get a break, I'm going to the bathroom. So I did. And I really was stopped up. You know, I felt miserable. And to explain where the bathroom is, my room was in the back of the school, and there was a storage room off of my room, and the boys' restroom backed up to that storage room. And that school has just drop ceilings in it. So out the door I went, down the hall, around through the school, boys' restroom there, and commenced to relieve my sinuses. I came back into the classroom there, and remember, my setting and my stance was, we're going to do it right, or I'll have your head. And I walked in the classroom, there was snickering going on. I thought, have something to deal with here. Reached down and put my hand on my pistol here, you know. Walked around in there. Boy, it got deathly quiet, but then behind me it snickered. So I just swung around on the whole group. what's going on. They dared to snicker again. And some glance, my oldest daughter was in that class, and some glances got thrown at her like, you know, speak up. So no one would speak, so I zeroed in on her. And she kind of put her head down. I didn't say anything right away, and then I said, what's going on? She said, Papa, it sounds like there's a cow in that storeroom. They later explained that they were all quietly, studiously working. They'd forgotten that there was a ceiling tile missing in that storeroom in there. And I was just in the next room there, doing my best at the job that I was doing. And she said they were all quietly sitting there, and the door was open. She said this sound came out of that room that just... Well, those things are special, but they also humiliate us and help us realize who we are. But let us remember above that what we're called to do. May God bless you as you go into this year.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.